SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
A very good Monday. Race fans, Sirius 219, XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website, stevebick.com. A bright, sunny, cold, wintry morning, and hope that that's the case as well in Kentucky. Not too cold, so that everybody can make up for the lost time that delayed the start of the January sale at Keeneland. They'll push back 24 hours. Didn't get a chance to note that development on Friday, so I wanted to kick it off first and foremost. I think we might talk to Tony Lacey from Keeneland, and always a pretty notable. It's always interesting. The January sale, as things get going, the sales calendar for 2022, and you know, there's a little everything, and most notably, the short yearlings, that the horses of all ages, but the short yearlings always take an interest, so. We'll keep an eye. It's going to run 4 days. And instead of Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, they'll go Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. So like I mentioned, we'll see about a visit from Tony. And we'll slip in some notes. I saw where Math Wizard got supplemented the other day. At the end of the year. We got plenty of results, even though it was, you know, something of a quiet weekend, and it was made that much more quiet by some of the Friday cancellations. But certainly Friday's racing highlights, tough to get past what transpired at Gulfstream. And it is unbelievable how this Rainbow Six jackpot concept just consistently has found headlines and newsworthy results. And in anticipation, of course, of what was supposed to be Saturday's, you know, big multi-million dollar jackpot, the pot was taken down, as you know, certainly by now, and it certainly at the beginning, you wouldn't have thought after two legs, you know, usually, you know, fairly early, you know, first leg, second leg, you'll get a big price and you think, ooh, this could get out of hand. Well, it took until the third leg because Mrs. Weber's Super Legacy. Mrs. Weber won a hatful of, not a hatful, but I think I saw at least three. So congratulations to Charlotte and the Live Oak team. But Super Legacy under 3-2. Okay, that's easy enough. Allowance winner, wire to wire, and wire to wire figures into this conversation quite a bit because that seemed like on every surface, whether it was the PETA, you know, and of course, you know, the Tapita is making things that much more intriguing on a day-to-day basis. And the funny thing about that is that Saturday's sequence, as we discussed with Mike Welch, excluded the Tapita. So here's, you know, on paper, when you look at a sequence that was, you know, started out with 7x9x11x9x9x9, it doesn't, you know, you think, well, you know, this shouldn't this should not be a wipeout situation. You got a 7-2 winner in the second leg, American Starlet for Wesley Ward, with Paco wire to wire. This was a turf sprint, and then that's when things got a little intriguing. And Bohemian Rhapsody for Gilberto Zerpa with Javier Castellano, 11-1, paid $25. All right. The next winner in that allowance for Dale Romans and Bob Barron, Family Time, $30.80. Okay. And even then, you think, well, it's going to take two more prices. Well, you had the third choice, 3-1, Collaborate. Wasn't a huge surprise by any means. Win the fifth leg. And it set things up so that there was only one horse that could take down the pot. And you mean you can't make this up? Yeah, it did send up the warning flare about it on Friday. But Canelo for Ken Swayze. And 32-1, longest shot on the board, and covered. And of course, as the word subsequently came out, and Ray Pollock had a interview, you know, Q&A that he sent out with more details, you know, $1,000 ticket, and the winner, who is, you know, remaining anonymous, was live to four horses. And Canelo, as seems to be the case so often, whenever we talk about these big price upset types, so often, it's wire to wire, and that's what you got here. And it really was not in doubt, frankly. I mean, one off by widening lengths under Corey Lannery. Canelo, 67-20, and I put up the Hindenburg tweet. Down goes Frazier. Unbelievable, $1.2 million, and that just, you know, the thing evaporates just like that. And Marty McGee had the greatest. Marty has now coined what is going to be a new horse player term officially. The jackpot gets Borislav. And, of course, that a reference to the late Dan Borislav, the owner and two-fisted better wild man, who in 2014 did the impossible, this, you know, day before takedown. And, you know, that was for multi-millions. Not that this score, $1.2 million, not that this is insignificant, but then, of course, just tragically, Borislav stricken and dies months later. The taking down of a jackpot the day before is going to be now officially known as getting Borislav. And that's what happened. So that turned into the Saturday. So congratulations to this player. And I don't think everybody is convinced that it's as simple as the way he laid it out to Ray. But that's for everybody to determine. They can have their own, you know, you can have your own. Everybody seems to have, you know, conspiracies on the brain regarding every possible everything in life. Gulfstream was going to offer a guarantee of the Saturday pot of $250,000, and there wasn't much doubt that it would exceed that, and then some. And sure enough, you ended up with $1.2 million. You know, everybody had already handicapped it, and it's still a situation I played, and I put one in, and got beat, virtually immediately. That rally squirrel, who was my third choice, I tried to tiptoe through that first leg, and needed tackle. That was a photo that I it's funny, at first when they hit the wire together live, I thought, I don't think tackle won. And then they showed it a few more times, and I thought, maybe tackle did get this photo. But ultimately, Rally Squirrel, Maker had a good weekend, seemed to win quite a few places. This was a first off the layoff Maker for Michael Dubb, and Paco aboard, and I went too deep. I tried to tiptoe through the first leg. It wasn't going to matter because that maiden second leg, I wasn't in love with the Cassie Breeze Easy from the outside, that Volcanic, and frankly, the two horses that ran 1-2, and again, you had a tight finish in the second leg, Volcanic. They were a dozen lengths clear of the rest of those maidens. That Charge It ran very well for Mandy Pope and Pledger. It's a homebred out of I'll Take Charge, the Indian Charlie mare. The two of them, clearly way the best in that maiden group. So you had a nice $10 price in the second leg. And then our first guest in about, 10 minutes, we'll talk to Matthew O'Connor. What a great story. And, you've heard Matthew on the show when he was at the University of Arizona. And the 23-year-old who worked for Nick Zito and I think he worked for Todd and for Dominic Schettino. O'Connor gets his first stake win, a graded stake win, the Tropical Turf, coming out of the good second in the Claiming Crown Emerald. And what a thrill. I'm looking forward to talking to Matthew. Arizona grad. Think a couple of different years in a row we talked to him while he was a student. In fact, I'll pull out the student photo. I'm sure he would prefer. I use the picture from Saturday from Clear Vision. This is a horse that MEB claimed at Belmont for $25,000. And, certainly a horse that, had run mid 90 buyers. This was a very clever claim, and off the good turnaround into the Claiming Crown, again, wire to wire, little under 11-1, pays $2,340. Value Proposition and Belgrano and Largent, who were the, it's funny, I used Belgrano, and I thought Belgrano was okay in here, ended up going off a crazy price, 48-1, finished third. But Value Proposition, two back for Chad and Seth Klarman. But Clear Vision provides O'Connor with his first stake win and graded stake. Pretty cool. We'll talk to Matt in 10 minutes. Think About It was a horse in the fourth leg. That allowance came running. Big four-horse finish. Could have been anybody. At 27-1. Now things are getting squirrely. Boy, could you have imagined if it didn't get hit on Saturday, on Friday, and then this sequence, the way it played out, had gone. I mean, as it is, I'll get to the final numbers in a second, but it would have been crazed. My Destiny, who absolutely made sense from the rail for Herman Walensky. Another horse recently claimed, that's second off the claim. And that paid $10.80, so it got us to the maiden optional claiming nightcap. And, you know, it felt like there were quite a few horses in there that could have won this. And Mrs. Weber, again, as I mentioned, here's Cassie and Mrs. Weber. Tap the Speed of Sound. And this is a tappet that was making a second start, moving to grass and to two turns. This is out of the very expensive mare, 1.3 carats, the $1.3 million Saratoga yearling for Live Oak. And was in control all the way around. So, what does it get you? A $1.2 million pool, $100,823. So, even though the pot got swept out from under everybody, basically the same amount of money was available on Saturday. I mean, this thing would have been probably, you know, in the $5 million range. But as it were, that's a nice payday. If you negotiated that sequence, you know, principally that think about it in the ninth, that was the one that was really tough. That horse, you know, there were literally, I went back and looked at it, there were five or six horses that, you know, seemingly figured ahead of Think About It. And in terms, let's see, in terms of the betting, one, two, three, four, and was the sixth betting choice. So there you go. That's, I went through and said, this is a horse that, you know, you needed to be very deep. So 100,000 to looks like 10. I'm going to get, see, 1.2 million, 20, yeah. So 9 or 10 winners. Pretty interesting set of circumstances. And there were also, we should mention, there were also some notable maiden winners and such in that sequence, and that included that Ironworks, looks like a Distorted Humor for Todd, looks like it might be a nice horse, first out winner by four at 6-5. This is a my racehorse Spendthrift product, Louis Saez aboard. There was also the allowance too, we should note, that three-year-old for Windstar and Sienna. So Windstar, Spitestown, Colt, Dean's List, going six. Pretty nice. 86 buyer for Dean's List, 79 for Ironworks. And Volcanic in that sequence for Breezy Z and Mark Cassie and Charge It, the two of them, 83 buyer for basically both. For Charge It, who's going to be a short price next time, was a short price this time, 3-2, and Volcanic. Volcanic, who was outside, I'm not sure why I didn't have a higher opinion of this one, got Lasix, got Blinkers, and hadn't been seen since September at Saratoga. And certainly, you know, ran into some good horses and is a horse that Cassie, you know, has thought highly of, you know, tried in the hopeful. So, Volcanic. See where they go from here. 83 buyer for Volcanic. You know, and there was also, I should mention, there was also early on the card, I was watching New York, Mufi on the Tapita, and this was, I'm curious about this. This is an Uncle Mo out of the Smart Strike Mare, Truly Together, the nice family of George Strawbridge. And Mufi, first-time starter, on the Tapita. And a winner, you know, confidently handled by Luis Saez, 81 buyer. So there were some nice performances. A good, interesting Saturday. But like everybody else, I got drawn in. I admit it. I wasn't sure what I was going to handicap and write up on Saturday morning. And I sat there and I said, all right, I'm going to go. I had handicapped, you know, the sequence, and we had the conversation with Mike Welch, and I looked at the clocker report and all that. So I it's Lucy in the football. There it is. Charlie Brown got us again. Yeah, I know. lots of recapping to do. Let me catch up before we have Matt O'Connor join us. I'll tell you what else is going on. Mike Trombetta is going to join us this hour after we talk to Matt. And the situation at Laurel is not good. I don't know if there's any other great way to, any great phraseology. It's ungapachka, for those of you that speak some Yiddish. It's a disaster. They're trying to add, they need, and there's going to be apparently, there'll be some reporting later this morning. There's a chance we hear from Alan Foreman before the end of the morning. But they're hopeful that they're going to have some specific answers. They had a meeting on Saturday morning, and Mike Rogers and the team at MJC doing what they can. They've got every prominent track superintendent you can think of that's contributing to the decision-making, including John Fast Track Passero. And I think Glenn Kozak had gone back down to try to advise and get a handle. You know, essentially, and this is not an unusual circumstance, this all has to do with the composition of the cushion. And silt and clay and silica and you know, all the things that make up, you know, the cushion that, you know, they've repaired the base. The base does not appear to be the issue involved here. But Mike Trombetta is going to give us some thoughts. What's been happening is, with the cold weather and with the snow and moisture, they've been getting ice balls that, you know, the track is not successfully incorporating the moisture the way it needs to. And these ice balls are coming up, and essentially they're like rocks being brought to the surface. So they're thinking about another Pimlico, you know, emergency mission, but there's concern that track is not ready for, you know, there's some training there today, but Dale Capuano is quoted from the weekend meeting that he had visited the track and he didn't think it was in shape to breeze horses. So we'll, Alan's got a conference call this morning, frankly, on this topic, on the Maryland Stadium Authority, and the, you know, things are progressing for the two new tracks for the rebuilt Pimlico and Laurel ultimately, but that doesn't help the horsemen right now. So Mike Trombetta to give us some perspective, you know, from the horseman's point of view and how they're dealing with it, because they're getting very frustrated. It's been, you know, one disaster after another. We've got some other, got a couple other pieces of news, and as mentioned, Tony Lacey is going to join us from Keeneland, and Rich Migliori at the top of the next hour, so that'll keep you busy the next little while. Right now, in the background, the 23-year-old horseman who has now got the words graded stake winning trainer on his stat line under his name at Equibase. Matt O'Connor joins us. Matthew, congratulations.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
This is a great story. I mean, we basically have been chronicling. I should put all of the O'Connor visits together for a greatest hits package, because from the time you were a student at Arizona to when you got your first winner, and now the first stake and graded stake, and this was a very clever claim for $25,000.
Yeah, you know, he had the back class, and he was coming off that big race in Saratoga, and it was a little risky dropping on him for the 25, because you got in the back of your mind what's wrong with him, why they're running the back for this cheap. But it all worked out.
Give us the, the conversation. I mean, who noticed the horse, and what was the immediate, you bring him back to the barn and you start going over him, and then the next morning, and talk about the process of adding him to the barn first of all.
Yeah, I saw his form and liked the horse, and sent out a text to a couple of my owners. No one was really too interested in it, so I called Uncle Anthony Bonomo and pled my case to get him, and gave me the okay, dropped on him, came out of that race in good shape, and kind of brought him along slowly, gave him a little breather, and brought him along methodically into the Claiming Crown, where he ran a good race. And he's just a fun horse to be around.
He's a six-year-old gelding, and so obviously from a condition standpoint, there wasn't a lot to do. Although being able, to run him in the Claiming Crown was a little bit of a luxury, and he ran very well there.
Yeah, when we took him, our intent was we're taking him to give him a shot in the Claiming Crown, because off that race in Saratoga, I think he ran a 94 buyer. He figured to be top three in that race, and then obviously off the race in Belmont, running 96 buyer. So we went in there confident. I mean, he ran a good race. We were disappointed but pleased at the same time with the second, and that's really it.
Unbelievable. And Julian actually had ridden him in the Emerald, and talk about taking a shot in a race like this. It obviously it's on the schedule and so forth, but still, putting him, let's see, he hadn't run in a graded stake. Actually, back in January, he had run in the McKnight. It's not like he's that far removed.
Yeah, we took him after the Claiming Crown. We were going to point for a starter allowance down here, see if one came up on the turf or if they would have rode one for us. We didn't really want to run him on the poly, and that race was coming up light. It looked like I thought we could be third, fourth in there. Obviously, Chad's horse and Todd's horse were the two to beat. So Nick Zito always told me, if you think you can run fourth, take the shot. We thought we could run third or fourth, took the shot, and it all worked out.
Hey, talk to about what feels like a bit of a change in his approach, because if you go back to the last couple of years, he'd been coming from off the pace in longer races, and is starting with actually a race that when Greg DePrima ran him off the claim from Tony Dutchrow, Tony had claimed him from Jerry O'Dwyer, but it seems like this is a new approach with this horse to have him up, involved, and on the pace.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's you've seen his form. He's a different horse when he makes the lead or he's up close. He kind of gets brave out there, kind of horse that likes to get loose, get in the rhythm, and be in the bridle, and he clicks on from there. I mean, he's got a pretty big turn of foot from the quarter pole. You can see that in both of the races previously before I claimed him, and he's just completely different horse when he runs on the front end.
Well, and even though Julian Leperu is thought of as a guy that that I don't want to say takes a hold, but a guy that is patient out of the gate and likes to come with a run, he's very effective on the front end.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I mean, Julian's got great hands. You could see in the win the other day, dropped his hand, just let him find his rhythm, let that seven horse go on, take the lead down the backside, and kind of gave him a little breather, and picked it up when it was necessary.
Take us around as you're watching, and you know, he comes off the turn with a clear lead, and you know, you certainly see those familiar Seth Klarman silks, and you know that that the Chad runner is going to be coming, and there he was.
Yeah, you know, when they turned for home, he looked good. Obviously, Chad's horse, Todd's horse, two really classy animals. You're expecting them to make a big run, but they kicked on, maybe not 100%, but he's a game horse. He's a gritty horse. He just digs in and he does his job.
Well, does the job, and you got the job done too. I mean, to have him, you know, ready to run an A race like this, and you know, it's not even, he didn't even necessarily run a you know, a new top. You know, he's a 6 year old. He kind of is what he is, but it's got to be just a tremendous, tremendous thrill. And actually, I think it was your first starter of the year, right?
Yeah. Yep. First starter of the year. You know, you got to try to top that throughout the rest of the year. But great way to start it.
Unbelievable. And let's see, total, it was your 57th starter overall and your fourth winner. And this seems like a perfect segue before we talk about, you know, what else is in the offing for this horse and others. You know, talk about, you know, how things have progressed and you know, your development. You're still, I mean, obviously they're going to keep calling you, you know, the young Matthew O'Connor for a while yet.
Yeah, I mean, we started off with a handful of horses. We got in Saratoga this past summer. We got up to 15. I mean, they weren't really the quality to be at Saratoga, and we kind of trimmed the fat. Came down here with four. Obviously, we have him, a couple of unraced three-year-olds, and another claiming horse. But hopefully, the win leads on to getting a little more quality, a little more numbers, and we could have a big year, hopefully.
You talked about your uncle, Anthony Bonomo. How many other clients have you cultivated?
Fine P stable we have. Jay Provenzano, great guy.
Nice.
He supported me since the summer and very happy for me. Hopefully we get to claim a couple more for him. And we got a group of guys from Saratoga that we put together a little partnership, bought a two-year-old last year. And then I got my father and a couple of his buddies have one or two horses. And we did some shopping in Saratoga this year, bought a Gormley Colt and Tis Now Philly, both New York Reds. They're over at Waver Tree in Ocala here in Dunn. They're doing good. So hopefully we keep building up and have a good middle of the year and the end of the year.
Well, you know, you mentioned coming to Saratoga, and, you know, you said that, you know, the stock wasn't necessarily the level. But if I'm not mistaken, you missed with one of your first starters at Saratoga. You just missed, I remember.
The filly, she was named Air Cavalry. She broke her maiden at Belmont for, I think it was 25 or 35, won by 8 or 9, brought her up there and off the turf, 42 life, and she got beat in nose, one of Wesley Ward's horses, beat her.
I remember.
She ran a big race.
Because I remember, I don't know if it was I can't remember why it's so fresh in my mind, but it was something, it probably had to do with TV with Seth or something, and you know, we might have brought you up, and you know, that your first opportunity at the spa and all that. So those wins will come. You have to
You know, it's a process. It takes time. I'm in the end of my second full year of training, going into my third year. So we're just grateful to be where we're at. Obviously, win a race like we did the other day means a lot, helps a lot. Just got to enjoy the process. You know, it doesn't happen overnight. Everyone knows that, especially in this game.
Well, you certainly, I'm just looking, actually, just pulled up the stats and the roster, and had the three. This was the fourth starter at Gulfstream going back to December and back to the start of the winter meet. But for instance, let's talk about a couple of different ones. One filly is back in New York. That Janny May, you left her in New York.
Yeah, well, we ended up. She went to Michelle Nevin, ran one time, and the owners ended up giving her the winter off down here in Florida. So she's on the farm in Ocala. So hopefully we get her back when we head back up to New York in May, June, and get her going. But she's a nice filly as well. She's very usable on the New York circuit, you know.
Well, no, and she came. I mean, she was, seemed like she was making some progress. You know, that was going in the right direction.
Yeah, you know, she ran that big race at Belmont the last time I had her with Kendrick. Got a little flat towards the end. I thought she was the winner that day. The way she turned for home and out in the middle of the track in the mud, but that didn't pan out. But yeah, she's a talented filly. I mean, she's quick. I think she's better, honestly, on the grass. So hopefully, when we get her back in the spring, we'll take the steps to try to get her in the winner's circle in New York.
Nice. How about the newly turned 3-year-old, another New York bred, that gelding Amalgamator?
Amalgamator, unfortunately, after his race, he colicked and did two surgeries on him. weren't able to save him, but he was a
good boy.
Sad. We never got to run him on the grass up there. He had talent, but part of the game, sadly, and just couldn't save him.
That's tough.
Yep.
Gosh, Matt, that's too bad.
Especially in our second year, we get a $100,000 2-year-old, big, nice animal, talented, and obviously things didn't go the right way there. But that ownership group across the board, very understanding. I mean, they're first-time owners, so it's tough starting out your venture as an owner with an event like that. But we're targeting OBS sale and try to get another one for this summer.
That can't be an easy call to make.
No, definitely not. I mean, and he was in Root and Riddle up in Saratoga for about a month. So, I mean, we kind of knew what was going on, but we thought we could save him and did the two surgeries. And it is what it is, sadly.
You got to have an iron constitution,
it's a tough game.
I remember,
high and the lows are very low.
We talked about this group about across the board. You told me about them.
Yep. Yeah, wow. A bunch of guys, dentists, doctors from throughout New York, Oneonta, a couple from Long Island, Astoria, Queens. And they named the horse after, I think it was a dental filler, is an Amalgamator or something like that. It would have been a fun ride, but they're very understanding. For new owners, they understand the game and they know things happen. So hopefully we get them a good one this year at the sales and hopefully have some fun, win a couple races with them.
Well, I hope so. That's a tough introduction for anybody coming into the game. How about did you mention that you had an unraced 3-year-old or two?
Yeah, I have a little Union Jackson filly. We bought her off the farm, Willowbrook Stables, Dave Canizzo's farm, up in Saratoga around that area. She had a couple issues in Saratoga. She's a little tinier filly, a little immature, but she's heading the right direction now. She's probably two or three months away from the races, though, but she's quick. I mean, we'll see how far she can go fast once we get her in the races, but she looks to have a little bit of talent.
What's her name?
Her name is Carl Ann.
Carl Ann?
Yeah, one word. Carlann.
Carl Ann. All right. Union Jackson. All right, we'll watch for her. Back to Clear Vision. Matt O'Connor with us, and Matt breaking through. First stake win, first graded stake, Tropical Turf on Saturday. What do you see? You're going to basically go forward on the, you know, the miles, basically the turf mile route down at Gulfstream.
Yeah, I mean, I think a mile to a mile in the 16th is his A game. Came out of the race well, so we'll see how he is in about a week or so. Right now we're looking at that Tampa Bay Stakes on February 5th. So that's probably the next logical step. If that race looks like it comes up tough, we could always go look for an allowance race down here at Gulfstream. But, I mean, he didn't lose anything out of that race, and hopefully he keeps progressing.
Really exciting. How'd you celebrate Saturday night?
We had a little dinner, a couple drinks, and went to bed early. Got to work the next morning.
Well, and because we have to give not the credit, but we have to certainly include the university in the discussion. You know, that's where I first met you, and talk a little bit about going out to Tucson and your experience at the University of Arizona and how it contributes to what you're doing full time now.
Yeah, Arizona, great town, great school. I had probably the best 2 years of my life out there. Great staff, and you develop an appreciation for the industry as a whole, going through all those classes. Great way to, if you don't have it into the racing industry, you can go there, network. They just, obviously, the symposium, they bring in a lot of great people in the industry, and it's just great time out there. I'm going to be a guest speaker over there, I think, January 19th. So now we got something to talk about after that one.
For sure. I was just really, I'm only just back. It was, at symposium, and as always, you meet, there's always a fresh set of new faces and youngsters, and it's always invigorating. It's just it was a great weekend between your win in the stake and Lindsay Schultz getting her first win. I'll talk about that later. I'm just always happy to showcase and celebrate the young people that are devoting their energies and their commitment to the game. Who else you should really give everybody your resume to, all the horsemen that you worked for and the experience that contributes to your day-to-day approach?
Yeah, so I started working as a hot walker for Dominic Schettino when I was probably 15 years old when I got my working papers. But before then, I was in Dominic's barn since I was 8, 9 years old, just doing little stuff, helping out. And from there, I worked probably 4 or 5 years, worked my way up to foreman. Then I went and I was assistant for Robert Falcone Jr. for a year before going over to Nick Zito, where I was assistant there, and while simultaneously going to Arizona. And kind of just took a little bit from each guy, put it all together, and have my own system, have my own method, the way I train, and took a little bit from each set, so it's fully rounded, I think. I mean, obviously, you learn something new every day. If someone tells you they know what they're doing 100% in this game, they're probably lying a little bit, but, it's fun. Continually learning, and hopefully 10, 20 years from now, we're doing big things.
Well, you're already doing big things, and it's got to be inspiring for anybody that has hopes, dreams, that they can do it. And in fact, what advice do you give contemporaries, whether they're just getting started or whether they're working, working as assistants and working their way, toward the goal of having their own shed row, Matt? What advice do you have for them?
Well, you know what you want to do. Just put your nose down in the dirt and work hard every day, and the opportunities will come. And it's not easy, but if you stay the course, work hard, and be an honest person, it'll all pan out.
Matthew Bryce O'Connor, MB O'Connor. You follow him on Twitter at MB O'Connor Racing. And he's also got a nice website, mboconnorracing.com. He's going to be horrified when I put up this picture of him and Sheets and his pals from this has got to be 5 or 6 years old. Matt, well done. Continued success, and we'll see you over the winter at some point.
Thank you, Steve. I appreciate it.
Not at all. Matthew O'Connor, 23. First graded stake win, the first of many. And we'll stay right here because another young trainer, up and coming. No, wait a minute. He's more than up and coming. He's arrived. In fact, maybe he might say he's already on the other side of midnight. Mike Trombetta joins us. Good morning.
Good morning.
Happy New Year. The most important question is Marie planning on taking that Christmas tree down anytime soon?
Nope. And makes her happy.
That was the funniest. I saw it. I don't know where I saw it. I saw it on I guess on Facebook maybe or somewhere.
Yep.
And right? She just says she's sitting in her favorite room there. The big looks like the family room, the great room, and I got a feeling that the tree's not coming down.
No time soon.
Well, check with Clancy because his is literally dying on the vine. Before we talk the good things that are going on, Michael, let's talk about what's going on at Laurel. Your view and you know the horsemen's sentiment right now.
Well, you know, the horsemen are obviously growing very impatient, and it is a very difficult situation to work through because it's been a long, you know, it's been a long year of having some track-related headaches, so to speak. I do feel like, you know, they finally had things very close to being figured out. Well, the unknown is how the track would handle the adversity of the cold weather. And that's the latest and greatest problem. And, you know, they're continuing to tweak the blend of material that is used for the cushion because what they have is just not performing to expectations due to the cold. So I do believe, I'm trying to be optimistic, I do believe it's another bump in the road, another hiccup. But, you know, they're working hard to correct it. And I'm hoping this week that happens. And real soon, we should be able to get back to it.
It seems like, you know, given, I want to say what, two different repairs, including the, you know, the extended situation from the spring into early summer where Pimlico, I mean, thank goodness that Pimlico is there, right? I mean, I don't know where you'd be without Pimlico. I did see Dale Capuano's comment that he isn't convinced that Pimlico's ready as a safety net right now either.
Yeah, none of us knows what that would look like because none of us have ever had to race there in the wintertime. You know, and you know, that just leads to other problems. You know, I understand they're trying to do everything that they can. But, you know, quite honestly, if we couldn't get Laurel in good enough shape to race, then it's probably not in the ideal situation to train. And then if we can't train, we can't support Pimlico. So, you know, one problem leads to another. So in a perfect world, they get Laurel straightened out. And, you know, if we lose another weekend of racing and we get it back the way it should be, then life goes on and we'll recover and we'll go from there.
Two things, and you know, one element of this is, you know, the owners who, you know, are missing chances to run. And then comes the horses and basically keeping them in a, you know, a treadmill scenario. I mean, you if you don't know when you're going to run, you can't necessarily train the way, you know, the way you would for targeted races in the book.
It affects all of us in so many different ways. You know, I mean, from the guy that has two horses to the guy that has 100 horses, you know, we're all affected, you know, adversely in different ways. And, you know, we just have to be a little bit patient. I know it's hard. I'm affected by it as much as anybody. And, you know, we just try to hope that the right people are looking at it and they come up with the right solutions, and then we can get back to it sooner than later and hopefully have green pastures ahead of us.
What, you know, you've got a strong set of owners, including some major regional players, and so everybody, you know, everybody that's rooting for and contributing to Maryland Racing, wants things smoothed out. But what do you say to owners, and how do they react?
Well, you know, some of them handle it better than others, and we spend a lot of money to keep these horses going, and racing them is the only way to get it back. And when we can't race with any kind of continuity, it becomes painful.
All right. Well, we'll watch for the latest today. We may hear later in the morning from Alan Foreman. It seems, Mike, that every track superintendent that's ever worked in Maryland is on the grounds.
Yeah, they're pulling in everything that they can to get the best answers. And I do have a lot of confidence in these guys that they're asking for their assistance. They're experts. There's no doubt about it. They're as good as you get in the field. So I'm sure they'll have some solutions. It might take a little bit of time to implement them and get the train back on the tracks. But, you know, I haven't lost hope. I think we'll be fine. It's just a bit inconvenient right now.
Well, I hope for the best. Let's spend a couple of minutes too and check in on the barn and how things are going. And of course, you got how many down in Florida right now?
You know, we keep between 16 and 18 horses or so in Florida for the winter time, and you know, the bulk of our turf horses that are, you know, the regional types that have got the run most of the season, you know, we turn them out for 2 or 3 months over the winter. But we do take some down there and try to bring them along a little further, and with the idea of racing them a few times, and then if I need to give them a little spell in, you know, late February or March, I can do that there in Ocala and then bring them back north in the spring.
How are you finding and how are you employing the Tapita so far? You've got maybe nine starts at Gulfstream or so.
Yeah, with the Tapita, I think it's a nice addition. You know, I was hoping that the dynamic of being able to train on it would have been a little bit more. We'd have some more opportunities. You know, they, because of the way that the layout is of the track, you know, so most people train on the dirt, and they do open up the Tapita for an hour or so, a couple of days a week to kind of, you know, you can get on it to breeze or what have you. And it's, you know, days like yesterday, it's a great addition. You know, the entire card's off the turf, and then they just roll over to the Tapita. And I didn't look at it hard, but I'm assuming that they didn't get a lot of scratches, and those horses got a chance to run. So I think that's an excellent addition, and I think that, you know, it had become more and more popular as time goes on.
And I'm just speculating, given how much success you've had, and we should note, Mike, by the way, you're coming off your best year in terms of earnings. You're coming off your best year in your career. So let's float that out there. There's been years where you've had individual, you know, high profile stake horses, but the cumulative numbers from last year, your best yet. And of course, you also, I can't remember. Did we talk after 2000? I think we did.
I don't know. But, how we were able to reach that milestone, I'm not so sure. But I'm real grateful that we got there, and especially coming off the year we did in Maryland, because, you know, that's where the bulk of our action takes place. And it certainly was a bit of a tumultuous year.
Well, given what I started to float is having the option with horses down at Gulfstream with the Tapita, and given your success at Woodbine, it feels like, and the fact that you ship horses to Erie too, to Presque Isle, it you get the sense that you might you might find some things out. You could probably experiment with some horses and find out if synthetic is in their liking, and for the rest of the year utilize, you know, the options that you've got going to Toronto and to Erie.
Yeah, and what we've learned with the synthetic, you know, most every horse is trained good on the stuff, but until they've raced a time or two on it, you really don't know what you have.
Exactly, exactly. Well, let's talk about some of the horses that you have and that we've seen, you know, go postward in the recent weeks, and I suppose go back to last week to New Year's. Talk about Mr. Jefferson and where you go after that Jerome try.
We're going to take a hard look at the withers. We don't think that he liked the track. That day it was pretty much underwater, and he never really seemed to pick the bridle up and want to participate. So if he trains well from there, we'll, you know, and the withers is the same crowd, we'll certainly maybe take another try at it.
Nice. I figured. I mean, there's been it's this time of year, too. I mean, you know, you get these wet tracks, and you can't just be dismissive of the results. I do want to ask you about a maiden that I think has got upside, and certainly when you look at, you know, you look at the pedigree and who's involved, and I'm talking about Estate, that Quality Road filly who's knocking on the door. What's the formula to break through and graduate?
You know, she ran adequately enough on the dirt, but I just felt that there was more to be had there, so I asked if I could send her on down to Florida to try the grass, and her first grass effort was really solid, and she jumped up and ran a good third against some maybe what could be higher-end types of horses.
Mm-hmm.
So I think turf is in her future, and, you know, we hope to get another run or two under her over the winter months.
Nice. This is high-profile connections, Gainsway and Ellen J. Foxwoods. Nice. How about Momos, who you sent out west?
Yeah, you know, now that didn't go quite as well as we would have hoped. You know, they had some bad weather out there, which, as we all know, is kind of rare. The turf was a little soft, and I think that might not have been to his best liking. But, you know, he still ran credible. He was only beaten two lengths for everything, so we're going to regroup, get him back east, and try to figure out a new plan.
Well, and that race ended up moving to the flat, right? It was supposed to be on the hill.
Yeah, exactly. So it was the 6.5, and it was a bit soft, and, you know, I would have loved the opportunity to go with the original plan, which would have been the down-the-hill race on a firm course, but it just didn't work out that way. So this goes to show you, I mean, sometimes the weather works for you, and sometimes it works against. And, you know, between the Jerome and the Joe Hernandez, it just, you know, on that particular weekend, it wasn't ideal on either end of the country for us.
Well, how something that was pretty good was Jakarta's performance, the Bustin' Stones mare for the Wyckoffs that won the Mrs. Claus over the holiday.
Yeah, Kirk sent her to us, and he told me either to think about running her at Laurel in the Stake or the race in Parks, and we cross-entered, and, you know, the race at Laurel was clearly had so much more speed than the race at Parks, and we opted for that. She drew the one hole, and she broke sharp, and it was over.
Yeah, big time. And what's next for her?
We're going to look at the race at Laurel and then possibly train her to the Barbara Fritchie, which would be back at 7/8.
Nice. Very nice. Got to ask you, let's focus on Maryland's and the juvenile championship winner, that Declaration of War colt, Joe, for Mr. Grant.
Yeah, he's been a barn favorite since he came in. And, you know, we're excited about him. So if we can get back to doing what we're supposed to be doing in Maryland, you know, we're looking to run him in a spectacular bid.
Excellent, excellent. He's obviously got some upside. Let me check in on the runners coming up this week. Mike Trombetta with us to offer some perspective on the situation at Laurel. How about in New York? You've got Keeping the Edge and Continental Congress this coming up on Thursday.
You know, I'd be just glad to get a race under these horses. One hasn't run yet, and one hasn't run in a while, and we're getting into the more difficult time of the year. So I'll just be glad to get them a start. Hopefully they can get things going and then, you know, continue forward from there.
What do we want to know? The one is Larry Johnson. Looks like a Johnson homebred. Yeah, Continental Congress, Constitution, Philly, Virginia bred. And now, this one actually certainly hasn't been afraid to run, right? The sixth start. This will be the sixth start.
We experimented with her a little bit, and we tried different surfaces, different distances, and it didn't work out as good as we'd hoped. We gave her a little bit of a break, and we're starting back with her, and she seems to be doing really well. So I'm hoping that we can get the season started off much better.
And then the first-time starter you mentioned, he's a super saver, gelding, keeping the edge. For who's NK Racing?
You know, these are some folks that Alex Solis looks after. And
nice.
He sent us a few horses, and they've been involved with some of these other partnerships that we've done with L&J Foxwoods and things like that.
Wow. They've had their hand in a few successful horses. And then, yep. Mike, I certainly should get an update, given our mutual appreciation for Win-Win-Win. What do we know about what's gone on toward the stallion career?
You know, I'm hearing good things. You know, everybody's waiting to see what these foals look like. I think he had his first foal the other day.
Oh, nice.
You know, it came out on Twitter that they were very happy with what they saw. And, you know, there's obviously more to come. But at last I heard he was bred to like 90-plus mares. So, you know, in today's world, that's a pretty good first year.
Well, he's at Ocala Stud, and he's 5,000 this season, and of course hat trick and an interesting pedigree. I'll bring him up with Sid. Did you send any mares yourself?
I actually have a mare in foal to him,
and it is up in Maryland to drop, or
she's right there, Country Life. Yep,
very nice. Well, give us an update too on the Country Life partnerships.
They're doing good. They've bought some nice horses this year. You know, they're anxiously awaiting to get back to it and run some more of these guys. But they understand how it goes, and hopefully real soon we'll have plenty to run.
Outstanding. Mike, I appreciate you giving us the perspective on the situation at Laurel. Hopefully things smooth out and they get back to racing, and we'll keep everybody advised. And we might catch up later in the week with either Alan Foreman or Tim Keefe, depending on who's got what to tell us. Mike, we will see you soon. Continued success.
All right.
Hope it's another great year.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Mike Trombetta, everybody. And you can follow Mike, and you can follow little Mike, too. The Trombettas are well represented on Twitter, Trombetta_Mike, and then Mike Trombet 3. And, of course, one of my longest-running friendships around the game with Mike, who just does a tremendous job. 2000 and how many now? 2009 winners in his tremendous career. And last year, over $5 million in earnings for his best year yet. So does a tremendous job. He's got a great team. And, you know, what's amazing, actually, is that only one graded stake win, and yet it was his best last year, and yet it was his best year collectively in terms of earnings. Let's take a break. We're just at the top of the hour. Rich Migliori is going to join us. We'll talk about some of the weekend action in New York, including a DQ from Saturday's stake, and curious what Mig's thoughts are. Let's take a break here. Hour two at the races, Sirius XM.
the latest racing news. It's At the Races with Steve Vick on Sirius XM Radio.
There's a great story to tell in Pennsylvania. Only three states have produced more Breeders' Cup champions, and no state can match our performance in recent years. Since 2016, our numbers of mares bred has skyrocketed, unlike the national trend. And this year's live foal report shows Pennsylvania up over 50%. Why? Our incentives and bonuses are the best in North America. Please visit us at PABred.com and see why Pennsylvania is the premier place to breed and race.
Why, in the past decade, has BRL Equine become the premier equine supplement company in the industry? Because we spend millions in research and development before we ever put out a product. Because we use only FDA-supervised facilities to manufacture for us. Because what we say is in them, is in them. Because they work. Because if you're not happy, I'll give you your money back. And because top trainers and veterinarians in thoroughbred racing, standardbred racing, three-day eventing, and barrel racing all trust in BRL Equine. Shouldn't you? To find out more how Flexify HA, Unlock, Bleeder Shield, and EPO Equine can help you, contact me, Joseph Vellante, 215-501-6880.
Horseville.com is a cost-effective, time-saving, paperless revolution. Vendors are able to generate electronic invoices for owners and other vendors who can pay through Horsebills.com for just 50 cents. Turn hours of work into minutes with our easy-to-use site. Have our team take over your bookkeeping or continue to do it yourself and pay only our low monthly subscription fee. Check out our video tutorial on the Horsebills.com YouTube channel and get started today for free. Horsebills.com. Toll-free number 888-938-4643.
Sirius XM Sports presents